Welcome to Made Not Born, a podcast about learning to lead. I'm your host, Alison Chadwick. I'm a leadership coach, so I'm fascinated by what great leadership looks like now and what it takes to get there. Because it rarely just happens. Great modern leaders are mostly made, not born. They learn how to lead on a journey of successes, struggles, and sometimes a little help from coaches like me. And the lessons they learn are often helpful to hear. So I'm talking to some inspiring leaders about their made not born journeys and some of the valuable lessons they've learned and are still learning along the way. These are conversations, not coaching sessions, but I think you'll still find plenty of useful fuel for your own made not born journey or to share with anyone you know who's learning to lead. Today, I'm delighted to be chatting to the brilliant Nick Hulley and Nadia Loscott, the Joint Chief Creative Officers of AMV BBDO. In this episode, we talk about what it means to truly lead from the inside out, the sweet spot between chaos and order, and what's possible when you believe in creativity without fear. But first, let me tell you a little bit about Nick and Nadia. It's no exaggeration to say that these two modest people together form one of the best advertising creative partnerships in the world. Hailing from South Africa, Nick and Nadia built their impressive reputation there at the legendary agency Hunt Lascaris. Joining AMV BBDO in London in 2010, Nick and Nadia's leadership potential was quickly spotted and they were made CDs in 2014, ECDs in 2019, and then Chief Creative Officers in 2021. At AMV, they have both made and led an amazing body of culture-shaping, convention-challenging work that fulfills their aim to break through the clutter for their clients. Over the years, the pair have won numerous awards, including two coveted D&AD Black Pencils and more than 20 Grand Prix at Cannes, including Titanium and Glass. And in 2021, they helped AMV win Agency of the Year at Cannes, D&AD and The One Show. You might think that all this creative edge would come with sharp edges, but Nick and Nadia bring the empathy that defines their work into who they are as leaders too, truly embodying the kind of nurturing, thoughtful leadership that's needed more than ever in these challenging, anxious times. So yeah. Pretty good, quite nice. Two perfect guests for this podcast about modern leadership. Welcome to the podcast, Nick and Nadia. Lovely to chat to you.
It's great to be here.
It's lovely to be here. Thank you for having us.
I'm really looking forward to talking about leadership with you because you are, as I said in the introduction, two of the leaders I love the most in the world. I think you are incredibly inspiring and human. And I just want to really take some time with you to kind of unpack what that takes for you to be those leaders. So let's go right back to the beginning of your journey. Often we do start to learn about leadership from people who led us at the beginning, and sometimes that's a really good thing, and sometimes it's a lesson where we go, oh, I never want to be that person. So tell me a bit about some of the early lessons that you learned at the beginning of your careers.
Our first real agency together was TBWA Hunt Lascaris in Johannesburg, and we learned this from John Hunt and Sandy DeWitt and those wonderful leaders that we had at the start of our careers. And it wasn't something that they said explicitly, but I think in everything they did, there was an optimism. And optimism was such a valuable lesson. There wasn't any problem that they didn't believe we could all solve. There wasn't any challenge that was too big. And being in a small agency at the bottom of the African continent, aspiring to participate in the global advertising game, to make appearances at Cannes, to make work that would register in culture globally, is inherently optimistic. Always to see what was possible, always to see the best in people, and always to just encourage problem solving and the joy of problem solving, the joy of making something out of nothing, the joy of overcoming those challenges. And I think in the context of South Africa, it is an optimistic country because it had to overcome stiff odds to become a modern country. And the other silent leadership thing I learned from them was they had a multicultural men and women, diverse backgrounds in the leadership of that agency and all through that agency. And that mix of diversity made brilliant work. And that foundational belief that it's better when lots of different minds and lots of different experiences come together around creative problems was a huge lesson for me, certainly.
I love that. Those are such great lessons. And also, I love that phrase silent leadership that you used. I think that's such an interesting thing, isn't it? Where sometimes the leadership is very much expressed and made clear, but actually sometimes it's just to be alongside that person and experience what it's like to be led by them. And I think that's a brilliant way of putting it. Nadia, what about for you?
The one thing that we learned really early on and constantly learn is that anger is no way of leading. Of course, it comes up because we're in an emotional business and creativity at its heart is all emotion, but it's a very short-term outcome of motivation. So you drive things forward very quickly, but it isn't for a long-term gain. Being able to see it wasn't something that worked on me and it built a resentment and the opposite of what it was enforced to do. There's a difference between frustration and anger, and I think that there are other ways to curb that and motivate people and motivate yourself to do something brilliant and epic.
Yeah, again, it's such a brilliant way to start this conversation. I said just a minute ago that you're such human and warm leaders, and here we see the impact of the lessons that you experienced on who you've become, and we're going to dive into that so much more. And I would just really underline, I see so much the impact of people who've been led by angry people and who've made them feel less in some way. You know, leadership is so much about followership, of course, and you will obey somebody who is yelling at you, but you won't want to follow them, right? So as you say, it can have a short-term impact, but long-term, you lose your best people like that. So I think it's a wonderful lesson to start with. So from those early years, you rose rapidly and here we are in London now and you've had very successful leadership here. When you started to rise into leadership and had to get the work done through other people, not do it all yourself, what did you have to start doing differently and how did that feel?
Through the prism of creativity and advertising creativity, where you create something and then you are responsible for getting the creative output out of other people. And I think when you're a team, you're responsible for that project. You're allowed to have a tenacious, narrow view. This brief, this project needs to be the best I can make it. And you're not obliged to see the bigger context with which that piece of work sits in. And when you take those first leadership roles, the creative direction, you're forced to place projects and briefs into its wider context. This piece of work contributes to a business challenge. This piece of work contributes to a bigger brand story or a brand world that is developing. And in order to understand that context or to shape that context, it makes you collaborate and listen to what the strategists are saying. It makes you listen to what the account teams are saying, and of course makes you listen to your clients and what journey you're on that's outside of just that narrow question of answering that brief. That makes you become more curious. It makes you listen harder. It makes you go, I might have a wonderful answer, but how does that fit into the bigger story?
Yeah,
it's such an important part of the dynamic between team and creative director, because I think the team has to push. They shouldn't have to have all the responsibility of the bigger picture, and yes, they should definitely be aware of it, but I think that it's a space that you have to create that is more playful and silly and interesting, that you have to be able to push as a team the boundaries and go, let's just go into this direction over here and see what happens. Yes, be true to the brief, but the job of a creative director is also to be objective and pull you back into another direction. And I think that if you don't have that push and pull, there's no healthy tension in that dynamic. And I think it always gives you much more interesting work when you have that.
One of the things I think that's really interesting about what you were just saying around the healthy tension is, of course, you're absolutely right. You get to great work partly through that healthy tension and the push and the pull. But then going back to what you were saying before about the role of anger, there's a balance there, isn't there, between you don't want to come in with the big boots and just say, no, that's not right. It's not good enough. Did you find it easy to bring that bigger perspective and that objectivity and that sort of tension into the process without bringing all the emotion in as well?
I think that we have always been ruled by curiosity and a collaborative nature. And we don't care where good ideas come from. We are hungry to take them. So I think we've always been open to inputs. I think another thing that benefits being in a team dynamic is it's not necessarily what you're saying. It's how you're saying it. It's a tweak of tone, a tweak of empathy or compassion, or just softening the exact same message will land in completely different ways. And I think that the dynamic between copywriter and art director, visualizers and word people, and just the way we communicate to each other, is that you learn that you go, why isn't Nudge not understanding me? And then you realize that it's because you might have think you've articulated yourself, but you haven't articulated yourself very well. So I think we hone our own communication skills between each other in order to be able to communicate in ways that doesn't stoke frustration, doesn't create the negative. That is a skill that has to be worked at every single day. Every single day you have to wake up and go, are my words going to be interpreted the way I want them to be? It's the old writing in cap locks on email or text. That just is going to be interpreted as anger. It doesn't matter what you do. It's not what you're saying as much as how you're saying it.
I also think that because you're going from being a team to then being a creative director, as you move up, it's the same job, but it's an entirely different job every time. And you have to be able to be quite pliable in understanding the different dynamics. I think that you learn leadership skills as a team, and you can't expect a team from one day to another to just have them. So much of leadership is about learning how to lead. And I think that it is always that funny thing. It's like, now you're a creative director. And I think that it's impossible to just be, now you're a creative director, now you're an ECD. You work at it through experience. You learn how to get the best out of people. But the progression is useful for leadership because you can have empathy and understand where people are coming from in a different scenario each time. It is always about the human side of it and understanding where that unlock needs to come from.
It's so rich what you're saying. You've got to learn to lead, and it's exactly what these conversations are about. We've worked together on that journey a bit, which has been a privilege for me, and I've seen you be incredibly thoughtful and intentional. And actually, one of the things that's weird about leadership is sometimes it's quite boring, isn't it? It's like every day you've got to wake up and think, how do I want to be today? How is it going to sound? And there's a sort of discipline, which is the boring bit, isn't it? Around, I'm just trying to learn to have better conversations in this way, or I'm just trying to learn to get out of the weeds a bit. What did you find the hardest, you think, in that disciplined, intentional learning journey?
It always feels like such a neat narrative of career progression and the ladder that you seemingly climb. And it seems like that from the outside is, oh, well, you've arrived now. And it must be super easy just to make decisions and neat and tidy. The truth is the complete opposite. Living in chaos and an uncertainty is really what leadership is all about, because things happen all the time that destabilize you or destabilize the team or destabilize the business. And I think what's interesting in creative business is when you're starting to think of an idea, you don't know when that idea is going to arrive. You don't know how it's going to arrive and if it's going to arrive. And that is such an uncomfortable, uncertain place to be. Like, I can feel it in my bones. That is actually exactly what leadership feels like. Do I know how to fix this problem that's going to arise tomorrow? No. But you find a way of fixing it. And it's an important thing because both of those sides are creative and led from an emotional space.
Yes, it's interesting. The idea of almost bringing your creativity into your leadership using some of the same muscles. Nick, how about you? What have you found the most challenging part?
Am I allowed to say getting people to do their timesheets?
You are allowed to say that, yes. Say that.
That is the hardest part of the job.
By far.
Just do your timesheets.
Please.
My natural habitat is in books. It's in the rabbit holes of thinking about the problem and how to solve it. When it's one-on-one with people and you can engage in a dialogue and you can test your ideas and you can bounce your theories. And when that habitat moves to larger, busier, messier, more unfamiliar social settings, then I'm not in my comfort zone. I don't mind speaking in front of lots of people, but the scrum of larger social occasions is not my natural environment. So I had to wake up every day and go, it's good. You have your voice, you have your opinions. You love being one-on-one. You love being in those more intimate situations. So it's finding ways of replicating that in the bigger, messier environments. That's what I found more of a transition than other transitions from.
And it's so helpful. I mean, one of the best presenters I know, who everybody thinks is just a naturally brilliant presenter, spent really quite a long time videoing themselves and watching in front of the mirror and stuff to make sure they did it. That was years of discipline. And I think it's enormously helpful when you say, actually, this is what I say to myself to manage in times when I feel less in my comfort zone. We all have a comfort zone and we all have a space that doesn't feel like that. And part of, I think, learning to lead is, actually, I'm not at my best there, but I am at my best in those places. And over here, I'm just going to do the best I can.
Something that you taught us, Alison, a lot is that, you know, lead from what you're good at and the things that you love about your comfort zone, the books, the knowledge. That does give you an authority, and you're entitled to take that into the other spaces rather than thinking to yourself, I have to replicate what I think the skills are that are required to thrive in those other places. So thank you for teaching us that, because it can feel very intimidating going, oh, how am I meant to go into that world when I don't think that I'm naturally suited to that, when in fact, the skills you have just need to be adapted or turbocharged for those situations. Very valuable lesson.
I am not a fan of public speaking. I don't love it. I've never loved it. I get really nervous. And it's something that I've had to work on. And you've spent a lot of time talking to me about is talk about the thing that you know. I love visuals. I know visuals. I love art direction. I'm obsessed with it. When I speak about art direction, that is 100% my happy place. And I then land up feeling confident about speaking about it because I know in my heart that I know it. And I think that building out from that, you then slowly start building that confidence of speaking. And I don't only just mean public speaking on a stage. It is generally speaking in front of other people, because as a more introverted person, you feel safer in the safety of a smaller group. You don't feel as judged. And I think that has to come with leadership. You have to be able to get to that space and that place where you are putting yourself out there into an uncomfortable space for you. But it is all part of that growth and has been such an important part of my journey as a leader.
It is exactly that. It's what I describe as leading from the inside out. As you say, you find your center of gravity, you figure out what you love, you figure out who you are at your best. I think it is where you find your influence, it's where you find your confidence, as you say. We all have things we need to try and get better at, but be yourself with skills, and that's what you'll look like as a great leader. So if you had to sum up who you are now, you think, as leaders in kind of two words each, what would they be?
Collaborative. I desire that collegiate approach because everybody travels together. You all participate in a common cause. So fostering collaboration for me is critical. And I pride myself and hold myself to the standard of flexibility. You don't know everything. There's always more to learn. And as soon as something is no longer a good idea, you should be searching for what the next good idea is. It's about reinvention all the time. Staying relevant, staying fresh, staying creative.
Love that. That's brilliant. Now, Jill, what would your adjectives to describe yourself as a leader now be?
Nurturing is one. I think that nurturing talent and people is so important to the outcome of what we do. Making sure that a team or someone is happy and feeling confident in bringing their ideas and speaking in front of a room and allowing them the space to grow and change and have their career path in mind is something that is really important to me. So I always try to make sure that people are feeling confident in themselves and what they bring and have the space to be themselves, because I certainly don't believe in a cookie cutter way of thinking and of being. I think that the more different we are all in one place, the better we are as a collective group. So I think that nurturing spirit is something that I care deeply about. And then I also think that I'm dogged. It's the passion to keep going and to push where we need to push in the best possible way for the best possible outcome, even if it wasn't the idea at the beginning, that it can become something else and turn into something else. And you can only do that with a will to push and the will to make something as exciting and interesting as it is presenting itself to be. You might have shot something, or you might have thought the idea was one thing on a piece of paper, but you've come out with something else. And that happens so often, you've got to be able to embrace that and not let go of it.
Yeah, isn't that interesting, the balance of dogged and flexible between the two of you? Because, you know, it obviously works in terms of that magic of getting to amazing. I remember talking to a leader once who said, when you're a leader, you have to be absolutely convinced and tenacious about pursuing a course of action until you're absolutely sure that it's the wrong course of action. And then you have to change without hesitation. So actually, those two things do work together, I think, don't they?
Yep.
You have to have a vision. It's the North Star. But if the North Star happens to be south, we're moving south.
We're starting to get into a territory, I think, that's really interesting. What does it take to get to those breakthrough ideas? You are widely known for having an extraordinary body of what I would describe as breakthrough work. I think you said in another interview that you wanted to make work that breaks through the clutter and that lives in culture. And there is such an amazing body of work there, both that you've created yourself and also that you've generated as creative leaders. So everything from the Trillion Dollar Flyer, Trash Isles, which was the most extraordinary campaign, Essity, of course, 10 years of amazing work with them, Guinness, Currys, Mars. I could go on and on, Macmillan. It's quite a body of work, but it's not easy to get there. Part of it is about, of course, being authentic leaders in the way that we've discussed and finding your confidence, finding your influence. But a lot of it is also, as we know, about creating the conditions, yeah, for that breakthrough work to happen with your clients, with your teams, with your colleagues. It's a huge question. But how have you discovered ways to get through the tension, get through the emotions, and get to that kind of work?
Some of the best work makes things look easy. Some of the best clients make things look easy. Every brief, every long client story and brand building story has its ups and downs. You always feel like something is difficult to get to because it takes a lot of effort to get to a place where you're interpreting it in a brand new way. And I think that is what essentially what creativity and advertising is doing from a business perspective. But I think that creating those conditions for creativity to thrive, it has to start with a team, not just a creative team. I mean, with a flourishing team that broadly gets on. Planner, account team, production. You've got to have that unit in place to make something amazing. It's not just two or four people that make it amazing. Especially these days, campaigns are huge and have such a long life that I think that team dynamic overall is so important to how we operate. And it's important to acknowledge everybody in the team that is bringing their expertise and what they're doing to make this piece of work, this campaign and this brand successful in its own right. So yeah. I think that's where we always start, is with everybody in the team, making sure that they're all firing on both cylinders.
Yeah, it's a really interesting place to start, Nadja, and there'll be other things, I know, to add into this jigsaw puzzle of what it takes. But let's stay with team for a minute. Nick, you described yourself just now as very collaborative. What makes a great team? I mean, how, as leaders, do you try and influence that kind of teamwork that Nadja's talking about?
It's cultivating that shared ambition and that shared vision. When you've got everybody with a shared ambition, it just becomes this wonderful dance where the strats and the account teams propose and the creatives almost counter-propose, and that influences the strat, which then tweaks, but then influences the creative, and you then end up in a just this wonderful dance where things just get better and better. And I think that's what you're always looking for. You're always looking for those relationships that have broken down the formal process and are operating on just a free exchange of inspiring ideas that is building the work up.
A shared ambition is a brilliant place to start, and I could not agree more about that. What else goes in the mix, do you think, to make that team functional?
As a creative team and wider team, you have to vomit out all of the things that you're thinking about on that brief, on that job, on that account, so that you can put it all out on the table and you wait through, is this any good? No, throwing that away. Is that any good? And be able to have that discussion. And I think saying the thing that you might think sounds really stupid, or saying the thing that you've not told anyone before, as a leader, is really important to ask the stupid question. Say the thing that you didn't want to say. Will lead to a team of people following you because you are on the same level and you've shared something interesting that is on a personal level rather than just purely bureaucratic, professional, let's get the job done.
Yes, the formality again.
And I think with that formality, when an account or a team is flying, the ideas are emerging from everywhere. The strat is coming. Those lines blur, which again is it's the opposite of that formality. Everybody's pitching in and it works.
What's the role of empathy in this? As an AMV alumnus myself, I know that empathy is baked into the genes of the agency and always has, but it's one of those words that's easy to say. But sometimes if you're learning to lead, you think, yeah, but how do I show up with empathy? And what do you think the role of an empathetic culture is? And how do you make that happen as leaders?
You've got to have empathy for an audience that you're talking to, but within the creation of the work, you've got to have empathy with teams. If you pair that person up with a totally different person, the work's going to have a totally different outcome because of their personality and who they are, their background and what they've been through. You've got to know who they are emotionally as people to be able to motivate them, but also to get the best out of them and be able to have that gorgeous dance that they might have with each other and within the wider team to create the best and most incredible work that they can think of, and that they are always enjoying that creation process at the same time. That is such an important part of bringing empathy to your teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, what I love about that as well is that sense of nuance and flexibility in there as well, isn't it? As you say, people are different. And if you want to be a really modern human leader, as you were saying, Nick, it's not about formality. It's about a dance. And that's a very human thing. And who are you? And who are you? And how can you work brilliantly together? And I think one of the themes for me that's coming through this lovely conversation is this balance in getting to creativity between clarity of a shared ambition, for example, decision making, confidence to say, no, we're going this way, but also collaboration and empathy, which is all very nuanced. And I think that's worth talking a bit more about, actually, because right in the middle of that sits this incredible, chaotic world full of uncertainty where actually none of us really know the answers to anything much anymore.
Yeah, an advertising agency is finding a way to have order and chaos coexist. Too much order and you will kill creativity. Too much chaos, you will kill the business. And the only way to solve that, in my opinion, is to acknowledge that there isn't a solution to it. It's vigilance of knowing we do need to impose some kind of system, some kind of process in order to make room for the chaos to flourish, in order to be in a position to catch those sparks of creative magic. Do we have enough order to survive? Do we have enough chaos to thrive?
Do we have enough order to survive, enough chaos to thrive? What a fantastic summary of one of those just really central challenges of leading a creative culture. Let's put that on a t-shirt. A professor called Ralph Stacey did some work on complexity theory and finding the perfect point of maximum creativity in an organization. And he calls it finding the islands of bounded instability. Isn't that a great phrase? Such a fascinating subject. So, okay, a couple of quick fire questions. Nick, the first one for you. If there was one leadership skill that every leader should learn, what would it be?
In the context of creativity, I would say that what is required to make creativity is a basket of what is often considered soft skills of empathy, kindness, tolerance, failure. They are easy to look past when you're making tougher business decisions. These so-called soft skills are the entire foundation of creativity.
It's a brilliant answer. I don't much like the phrase soft skills, actually, because I always say, no, they're skills for results. Nadja, what about for you?
Leading with anger doesn't get you to the right place. I don't think I would have ever thrived in a place that is driven by anger and fear. In fact, the opposite. I don't believe that you can run a creative business on fear. I think our belief is creativity without fear. That's fundamentally how we run our agency and our department.
Wonderful. Last question. If, and this is a question I always ask my guests, and it's always a bit hard. So you've just got a postcard, beautifully art-directed postcard, obviously. If you could put one piece of advice on that postcard about learning to lead, so something maybe that you would give to your younger self to say, learn how to do this, remember that this is important. What would be your best piece of advice about learning to lead?
Constant learning.
Great. Would you share the postcard, Nadja, or would you put something else on it?
But I think that my postcard probably would say, be confident in the things that you know and start there.
Love that. Brilliant. What a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming to chat to me. I think this podcast has dived into some of the complexities of leading in a modern way. The modern world is complex, it's messy, it's uncomfortable, it's full of paradoxes. And yet you are together finding your way through that with courage, with compassion, with flexibility. And it's been absolutely inspiring to talk to you. And I know that leaders listening to this will walk away not just with a sense of slightly lighter shoulders, thinking, yeah, come on, we can do this, but also pockets full of skills and tips. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
I hope this episode has given you a little fuel for your own Made Not Born journey, whatever path you're on. If you've enjoyed it, please rate, review, share and subscribe to Made Not Born wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on social media. And finally, if you'd like to know more about my leadership coaching practice, visit madenotborn.co.uk. Thanks for listening.